It's a beautiful day to say what you need to say. It's a beautiful day to say what you need to say, yeah. And I can lead the way, yeah. Oh. Hey there, welcome to Time Out with Ty, the newly independent podcast brought to you by me, Ty Windisch. That's a very egotistical intro. I'm going to have to work on that. We're still in progress. I have a team of writers doing their best to come up with something better. We'll get back to that next week. For now, we're going to talk NBA Finals, the lead into the finals and the finals themselves, which start tonight. And this podcast will go up today with my good friend, Gerald Bourget. Please tell me I pronounced it right. I forgot to ask.
It's Bourget, but
it is Bourget. Damn it. Welcome to the show, Gerald. Sorry I got your name wrong. For the second straight week in a row, I've gotten someone's last name wrong. Good start.
It's a tough one, so don't beat yourself up.
It is. I always try to go too French. I took like 5 years of French, and it never helps me, and sometimes it hurts me.
Well, see, I mean, if we were in France, then you would have nailed it right on the head. So
yeah, that's a super French name.
It is.
Like, if you weren't in Phoenix, I think you'd be in France. Are you melted yet, by the way?
Not yet. It's supposed to be like 117 here this weekend, though.
Oh my God.
So that'll be fun.
See, I couldn't do it. Like, it gets 85 and I'm like, geez, it's hot. Like, I don't know if I want to go outside today. It's 85. That's like midnight for you. Like, oh, it's a little cold. It's only 85.
Yeah. I'm hoping for some rain, maybe with the help of the Splash Brothers this weekend, but we'll see how it goes.
That was a good segue. I appreciate that. Now we're not so aimless. We're going to talk NBA Finals. The two teams involved, which are, in case you've been under a rock, the Golden State Warriors and the Cleveland Cavaliers, very different paths to the NBA Finals. For the most part, Cleveland sort of strolled in. The Raptors gave them some trouble in Toronto, but ultimately, I mean, I don't know if anyone really, really thought that the Toronto Raptors were going to make the NBA Finals against LeBron James. Like, that's kind of what LeBron James does, is make the NBA Finals. I never really had a doubt. The Warriors, though, we're down at one point 3-1 to the Oklahoma City Thunder. Did you think they had a real shot to come back and win that series?
I did. I actually thought that the Thunder, when they went down 3-1, I thought the Thunder had a very good chance to close out in six. You know, everyone knew that the Warriors would take care of business in game five. But, you know, they had won in OKC those games by like 26 points on average. Just complete blowouts, and no one had seen the Warriors look that frazzled, that outmatched all year. It just wasn't something that happened. So I thought the Thunder were going to close in six at that point, but, you know, then Klay Thompson happened, and everyone remembers, oh, wait, they still have the Splash Brothers, and they can beat anybody on any given night just on their firepower alone. And then at that point, once it went back to Oracle for game seven, it was pretty obvious who was going to win in seven.
Yeah. For me, Klay Thompson is one of those guys where it's like you said, everyone sort of forgets, cause Klay is like completely willing to be the second guy. Like, he's totally fine with it during the regular season. Like, he'll be the first one to talk about how great Steph is, how great Draymond is, and all these other guys, but he's so good. Like, he's ridiculously good. Like, that 37-point quarter, it just feels like if Klay wanted to, he could probably be a primary guy on a team. It wouldn't be as good as the Warriors are, clearly, and he seems very happy with where he is, but he has the talent. For me, after the Thunder lost Game 5, I thought the Warriors were going to win the series. Because, look, yeah, it was in Oracle, and the Warriors are obviously great there. But, I mean, they had the momentum, and as soon as they lost that game, they pretty much lost the momentum. And for some teams, I don't think that matters. Like, the Warriors are one, clearly, where it didn't matter to them. They came back and won anyway. The Thunder are, like, the number one most likely contender to get in their own head outside of Toronto. Toronto's way worse. Like, yeah. Toronto can convince themselves that they're the worst team in the NBA and play like it at any given time. Like, they should have beaten the Raptors a lot easier. But in the West, that's Oklahoma City. I mean, they can just get so caught up in themselves and stop playing the brand of basketball that got them this far. And I think they're more likely to tighten up than the Warriors. And they definitely tightened up in the last three games of the series. You saw more isolation, less Kevin Durant, which is never a good thing. from any perspective outside of Oakland. They probably enjoyed that. I did not. I like watching Kevin Durant. So when they lost Game 5, and I believe it was a fairly convincing loss too.
They had to kind of eke out the win near the end because the Thunder.
Oh yeah, yeah. They lost it.
Yeah, they wouldn't quit, and that's the tough thing about the Thunder is I hated that series. I mean, that's the really most unpopular opinion, but I hated it for the fact that the Warriors. I didn't want either team to lose. You know, like the Warriors had history on the line. They had this historic season that was still in play, and then on the other side of the coin, you have Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook with KD approaching free agency and all the choking narratives that have come out of it since. Like, there was going to be some terrible hot take that comes out of that series either way instead of just enjoying a matchup of two really good teams, and one of them just happened to be the greatest, possibly the greatest team of all time, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know. With the Thunder, it's tough because in Game 6, they definitely fell apart near the end. But to say they choked, I hate that word just because it took freaking 11 three-pointers from Klay Thompson to win the game. It took a 41-point explosion from Klay just to extend the series. And, you know, nobody had beaten the Warriors 3 times all season. They did it in 2 weeks. Like, the Warriors lost 9 times in an 82-game season. And people are going to say that they choked. They weren't even supposed to be there. Yeah. They weren't even supposed to beat the Spurs in the first place. Like, that alone was a monumental feat that they accomplished. But the Warriors are just, they're just something that we have never seen before. And I don't think people understand that when the Thunder come into the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, it's so tough, right? Because you look at this Thunder team who people have been trying to break up for years, you know, saying Kevin Durant needs to go, Russell needs his own team, all this. And either injuries or just running into a complete buzzsaw. I mean, the last time they did make the finals, they ran into the LeBron James Heat, where it's like, okay, good luck. It took Dirk's best run ever to overcome those dudes in the first finals. And then a Spurs buzzsaw the second time they lost. And then they won the other two. And then this time they beat the Spurs buzzsaw, which looked to be... Like, people thought they were going to get swept after Game 1 of that series. Like, the Spurs demolished them, and they came back and won that series. They overcome the Spurs, and it's like, oh, good job. Now you can play, like you said, maybe the best team ever.
Mm-hmm.
That just, like, when they're on, I just don't think there's anything any team can do. Like, if Steph's making those threes, if Klay's making those threes, you can't cover them both. And then you have Draymond inside, Iguodala, Barnes... out on the perimeter somewhere. If he makes max money, I'm real disappointed, but he might. Cause it's just like, what really Harrison Barnes, like, what do you really do here? It's like Office Space. What exactly do you do here? Sometimes make threes, I guess.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with him this summer, but no, like you said, when Curry is at his best, when Curry is making shots, which he does pretty much every game now that he's kind of shaken off that rust from the MCL thing, there's nobody that can beat them. There's no one. They have the ultimate trump card. You know, Curry pulling up for three is a dagger in the second quarter. Like, it, especially at Oracle, when he starts doing that kind of stuff and the crowd gets into it, there's nothing more demoralizing. There's no dunk that is more demoralizing or any sort of play that can get an opponent down, can get inside someone's head. And you could play great defense on it, too, and he'd still hit it. And that's just an absolute killer. And that's, like you were saying about Klay, is that he's perfectly capable of doing the exact same thing. Like, if the Warriors weren't so fun, I would love to see him as a number one option on a team. He'd probably average, like, 30 points a game. And it's just... I don't want to say he's underrated, because I think after Game 6, everyone realized, wait a minute, he's really fucking good. But now, I still feel like he doesn't get as much credit as he deserves just because Curry is outrageous.
I think he's like a roller coaster. Like, he'll do something like that every so often, and then, like, Twitter and everyone just, like, way up. It's like, oh my god, Klay Thompson's amazing. And but then, like, after the game, he'll be pretty chill, and next couple games, he'll get, like, you know, I mean, it's not really ever quiet if you drop 25 points, but when you're playing with Steph Curry and Draymond Green, you can quietly score 25. So he'll quietly score 25 a few times, and everyone just sort of forgets about him, you know, and then Steph, like, twists his ankle or whatever, and Klay drops, like, 40 more points. Everyone's like, oh, yeah, he's good, that's right, and then they forget again. It's like this ongoing cycle.
Yeah.
It's nice that he doesn't care. Like, they have the perfect chemistry, because there's really... I don't know who the most, like, egotistical person on the Warriors is. There's this weird thing on Twitter where people think Steph has no ego. He certainly does.
Yeah.
Klay himself said, you can't take the shots Steph takes if you don't have an ego. Like, you can't pull up from 35 feet and be like, I'm just another guy. Like, no, that's a ridiculous shot. Like, you clearly have a really high opinion of yourself. There's nothing wrong with that either.
No, I think that's the difference between being cocky and being confident, and that's Steph Curry has confidence because he's the best damn shooter the NBA has ever seen.
Ever.
I think that people confuse, you know, having a solid family life and being a good person with, you know, having that cocky edge when you're on the court, having that confidence when you're on the court. You can be both of those things. But that is one of the things that I do love about Klay, is he's so just like mellow and low key compared to everyone else on that team. He doesn't mind not taking the credit, you know, he's just quiet. He looks like an NBA 2K creative player with the goatee too. Like, he's just the most mellow, low-key dude.
Honestly, he's really just, like, the Bay Area version of JR.
Yeah.
Like, they're damn near... I mean, Klay's more consistent and a better defender. But, like, it's so cool they're matched up on each other because, like, they act the exact same. I mean, Klay's not... Klay doesn't have, like, the sort of negative connotation that JR does after the, you trying to get the pipe DMs leaked. But, like, if that happened to Klay tomorrow, nobody would be, like, super surprised. Like, whoa, Klay Thompson's in the DMs? Really? Like, no, it would not be like that at all.
No, and that is one, I mean, this matchup is so great because there are so many, interesting individual matchups going on. You got Klay and JR. And last year, Klay kind of disappeared during the finals. He averaged like 16 points, shot like 40% from the field, 30% from three. You know, he was clearly kind of rattled by the moment. But right now, he's in the middle of his best postseason yet. You know, he's coming off that game six where he carried the team, not Steph. And, you know, in his second finals, it's going to be awesome to watch if he can carry forward that momentum against JR, who last year completely fell apart in the finals as well. You know, he shot like 29% from three. And it was funny because I was looking into the numbers, and before the finals last year and before the finals this year, he posted kind of similar shooting numbers. So I'm interested to see if they get good JR for a game or two or not. What do you think?
I mean, I think it'll help that they have, you know, more of a complete team this year. Like, really, I mean, this is, I didn't look into the numbers. I saw you had a tremendous piece I read to get ready for this podcast on the finals matchup that everyone should, I'm sure I'll tweet it out later. I think I retweeted it before, but you broke down pretty much every aspect of it. I didn't look at the numbers, but JR was probably one of the Cavs' only good 3-point shooters in the finals last year. They had, Dellavedova, who's a pretty good 3-point shooter. I think Shump wasn't doing well at the time. So really the Warriors only had to worry about JR from outside. They didn't have, obviously Love and Kyrie were hurt. They didn't have Channing Frye yet. So, I mean, I guess like James Jones, who is like Richard Jefferson, like those guys were still there. But I mean, those guys are like whites from Game of Thrones. Like those guys are shuffling skeletons on the perimeter.
Right.
So it's not the same. So really the Warriors could say, look, all, if we shut down JR from deep, that's their 3-point shooting done. It won't be like that this year. So I could see him being better, but certainly like you wrote this made me smile. Like it's never good to rely on JR. Like if you have, like he's great as an auxiliary piece. Like, yeah, we have this awesome team and JR, but if it's like, we have this awesome team because of JR, it's like, oh, I don't like your odds in the finals if it's because of JR. And clearly they have other talented players, but they're going to need JR.
Right. And it's going to be interesting, especially, you know, they have the Cavs have such a great offense when Kevin Love is at his best, when Kyrie Irving is at his best. But that's the problem about playing this Warriors team. I'd give Curry a much better chance of shutting down Kyrie than vice versa. I'd give Draymond Green a great chance of making Kevin Love unplayable as soon as the Warriors go small, because he can't guard, he can't stop a Curry Draymond Green pick and roll. There's no way it's going to happen. They're going to put, especially with Kyrie on Curry, are you kidding?
Yeah.
It's going to be open threes and alley-oop dunks off of Draymond assists off the roll over and over and over. And that's going to be the challenge for Tyronn Lue, is navigating that difference between offense and defense, because he's got Kyrie, who obviously is important to their offense, and he's got Dellavedova, who is a much better defender. Then he's got J.R. Smith, who's a shooter, and Iman Shumpert, who is, you know, pretty much exclusively a defender. And he's got Kevin Love, who is a shooter and an offensive weapon, and Tristan Thompson, who's a better defender but can't spread the floor outside of like 10 feet. I don't know how he's going to do that exactly, because, you know, having depth is good, but I don't know how you balance that offense and defensive struggle.
Yeah, that's going to be the tough thing for him. Luckily, he had some notes on how to use non-shooters against the Warriors at the wing position. Billy Donovan, I thought, did a great job integrating Andre Roberson into the Thunder's offense last round. Crazy to me that, I mean, people were, I mean, all rookie coaches, especially in high-profile positions, are going to get, you know, mocked. But, I mean, Billy Donovan, people were calling him Dilly Bonovan and all sorts of stuff way meaner than that during the regular season. Mm-hmm. He's been the best coach in the playoffs so far. I think Steve Kerr is the best coach left, though. I know you agreed with this in your piece. Mm-hmm. Even if his matchups haven't been as good, the thing about Kerr is he does not get flustered. The moment is never too big for Steve Kerr, because, I mean, both in basketball, in the NBA, and outside of it in life, he's been through so much. He's very grounded. He has a lot of perspective. He knows that, like, this is, like, it's the NBA Finals. It's the biggest game of the season, but it's a game. Like, he's aware of that. Ty Lue could get sucked into the moment. I don't think Steve Kerr will.
No, and I couldn't have said that better myself. He's such a happy-go-lucky guy that he understands that this is not life or death. Like, it was either after Game 3 or Game 4 against the Thunder, they got absolutely blown out. I think it was Game 3. He goes up to the podium and he says, well, a couple plays here and there, I think we would have had him. Like, he does not get down, because even if his team wasn't the kind of team that could win on any given night, no matter the circumstances, like, he just understands that there's more to life than just this. And I think that gives him an edge over a guy like Lue, who is, you know, he's going to be scrapping. This is his first finals. He's up against a superior opponent. He's the interim coach, so he hasn't even been there for that long.
He coaches LeBron James, which is a notably tough thing to do.
Right. And he's got, you know, it's a tough series, because this is their first opponent that's a real challenge for the Cavs. Like, every series they've had so far, they had the Pistons, who kind of snuck into the playoffs. They had the Hawks, who have just been a terrible matchup for the Cavs. And then they had the Raptors, who, you know, they're known for self-combusting. And they didn't in that series, to their credit. But, you know, they were one Game 7 loss against the Pacers away from having a new head coach. Now he has a 3-year deal. It's awesome how that works. But I want to talk about LeBron James in this series, because you and I think are on the same page as far as, you know, if he loses the series, yeah, he'll have a 2-5 finals record. We're not going to dive into legacy ramifications because it's stupid.
Yeah.
But how are the Warriors going to guard him, and will he be able to have the kind of series that he had last year?
I actually don't think they'll mind if he has the kind of series he had last year. And that sounds crazy, because he was brilliant. And he deserved finals MVP. Mm-hmm. I still think it should be playoffs MVP. That's a whole other conversation. But, like, I think you should look at all 16 games, which is still a small sample size. But you should look at more games than just the finals.
Oh, I'd love that.
I'd love that, too. I think, like, Iguodala doesn't win it then. LeBron probably does. Maybe Steph. But anyway... Like, if the Cavaliers become the LeBron James show, they're not winning the finals. Like, that was made clear last year, where he was clearly the best player, the most impactful, the most valuable player in the series, and they lost in six. And, you know, they made it to six, which is nice, but, I mean, they got two wins like that, and he's the best player. He's probably the best overall player in the world still. I got a lot of flack because I wrote that he was, like, outside of the top five at one point this regular season. Because he, I mean, LeBron goes into chill mode during the regular season. Like, I noted that in the piece. There's nothing wrong with that. Like, it makes sense for someone who has that many miles to not go hard every night. Playoffs, LeBron is the best player in the NBA. Like, there's no one better. He still needs a team, though, especially LeBron. And LeBron haters use this against him, that he's not Jordan, he's not Kobe. But part of his greatness is he gets teammates involved. Like, that's why those Heat teams were so good, because it wasn't LeBron. I mean, he was getting the ball to Wade, to Bosh, to Mario, Chalmers, all these guys. They were all involved to a certain extent. If he can't get Kyrie and Kevin Love involved, then they lost. And the Warriors, I think they're going to throw Iguodala on him. I don't know if they'll probably try to just keep Iggy on him, not switch too much. Obviously, if, you know, if either a smaller guy like Steph or a bigger guy like Bogut is on LeBron, that's 2 points for LeBron. I think, I mean, Iguodala is a great defender. He showed that against Kevin Durant. I think he'll get the start in this series, and they'll use Barnes off the bench. It's going to be fun to watch with all the small ball implications, but I think for LeBron to win, he's got to be at his best, and best LeBron is ball movement LeBron.
Right, and I think it's kind of crazy to wonder what LeBron might have averaged last year if he had had healthy shooters around him, like Kyrie and Kevin Love, obviously are the two big ones that come to mind. Channing Frye, if he had been there.
Yeah, he could, not to completely cut you off, he could probably have a 2020 game.
Right.
I would not be really surprised.
No, and last year's finals, he averaged like 8.8 assists, something like that, and that was with, you know, JR shooting like 29% from three, and he was one of their better three-point shooters in that series.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see how the Warriors are going to stop their offensive attack, and it all starts with LeBron, because Cleveland's offense is basically grind it down to the last 5 to 10 seconds of the shot clock. LeBron drives, kicks to someone, you know, to a cutter or to a perimeter shooter. There's more ball movement if need be, but that's usually how their offense runs. The Warriors have a lot of different options to throw at him, and Iggy will be the chief one, but they're going to have to keep him out of the paint, because that's where LeBron makes his living. You know, he's in the regular season, he shot like 70%, 69% on shots from 5 feet in, and on shots outside of 5 feet, it was like 35%. Oh. Like, just terrible outside of 5 feet. Not good at all. He's shooting like 32% from three. They need to make him shoot and hope that he doesn't have, you know, that kind of flashback series where he just starts draining threes again, because his three-point shot has just sort of disappeared this season. And I'm kind of interested to see how they do that, especially if Kerr, you know, goes bold and starts the small ball lineup that he used in last year's finals that tipped the scales in their favor, because that's an awful lot of wear and tear. That's a lot of mileage to put on Iguodala and the rest of their small ball unit. Especially with Tristan Thompson crashing the boards.
Yeah, I think for me, I mean, obviously, like, the players to watch are LeBron and Steph, and then, you know, the more famous secondary and tertiary options there. But for me, like, one of the guys I'm most interested to see how he is used in this series is Andrew Bogut, because he's been awful for much of the playoffs. So has Festus Ezeli, which has definitely hurt the Warriors. But if they can integrate Bogut and get good minutes out of him when LeBron's at the three, I think that's huge. Because, like you said, it takes wear and tear off the small ball lineup. And, I mean, like, even though he's become, like, an eighth man, it feels like, at times on this team, he's still one of the best rim protectors in the NBA. Like, if he gets the minutes. So if they can get him out there without losing too much steam on offense, I mean, he could do a lot to keep LeBron out of the paint. I mean, if you got Iguodala on you in man coverage, and then once you get close to the paint, all of a sudden Bogut ranges over to you. I mean, even for LeBron, that's a brick wall to get through. That's why it'll be hard for the Cavs to play Shump with LeBron in smaller lineups, because they'd probably just put Bogut on Shump and let him sit like they did to Tony Allen and the Grizzlies last year. And that makes Bogut super dangerous if he can play free safety on defense. So either the Cavs go small, in which case they don't really need the Warriors don't really need Bogut because there's no big on the Cavaliers side. Or they go big, and if Shump's out there, then they have someone they can keep off from and play free safety. It's going to be so tough for them on both ends.
Right. There are so many matchup questions, and Bogut is a big one because the Warriors need, ironically enough, they want this series to start off as a more traditional lineup kind of series. You know, they want to be able to play Bogut against a more traditional lineup from the Cavs. But the problem with that is, with Tristan Thompson at center, they would definitely switch him onto Draymond Green. Like, Thompson is the better defender, and they'd try to hide Kevin Love on Bogut. And if Bogut can't make the Cavs pay for doing that, then he has to come out. They have to go to the small ball unit, and that the Warriors' small ball unit is fantastic in like short to medium stretches. Over a full 7-game series, that's tough to sustain, especially with the way that Livingston's kind of his turnaround jumper, which was, you know, he used to shoot like 150% on those shots.
Yeah.
Now it's gone. It's kind of disappeared. Leandro Barbosa's had a hard time finding minutes. Brandon Rush hasn't played in weeks. And those are guys that Kerr would need if he goes exclusively small ball. So, and there's another problem is even if Kevin Love is unplayable because of his defense, well, then they just put in Channing Frye, who can do a lot of the same, pick and pop things on offense and is a much better defender, not great defender, but a better defender. So this series is going to be a little more challenging than I think people realize from a matchup perspective. There's going to be a lot of chess pieces on the board. But it really might just come down to whether Kyrie can have a good defensive series or not, honestly.
Yeah, I think that's the thing people are sort of not thinking about as much is, I mean, if you ask me, the Thunder took the Warriors to 7. I mean, they took them to 5, then the Warriors took them to 7. But that series went to 7 games because the Thunder played fantastic defense. Like, they frustrated Curry, they frustrated Klay sometimes. They really frustrated Draymond a lot. I mean, They're so long, and they would start 5 good defenders. Or not start, or they would play 5 good defenders. I mean, Westbrook's a pretty good defender. Roberson is an excellent defender. His reach is crazy. Durant, I mean, any guy who's 7 foot outside of Bargnani is probably going to be a pretty okay defender. Kevin Durant's a good defender. Steven Adams is great. Cantor sucks, but they would play other guys with that lineup too.
Waiters had a great defensive series.
Waiters was good on defense too. There's someone I forgot. The Cavs can't do that. They don't have that many good defenders. They have Tristan Thompson and LeBron James and Shump, sort of JR. But like we mentioned earlier, I mean, Love and Kyrie, if they start together, the Warriors are tearing them up.
Like, yes.
People laugh at Steph's on-ball defense still, which is becoming a played-out, like, just wrong thing. Like, he led the NBA in steals last year.
Right.
So even if he's not, you know, a great, I don't know, like, on-ball defender, he at least gets turnovers, which has value. Like, Steph is not the Steph of 3 years ago where you had to hide him. He can play a little defense. I don't know why they kept him on Westbrook for that long, because Russell Westbrook's just too physical for him.
Right.
Like, I think he'll defend Kyrie pretty well, but I think Cleveland's going to have so many problems on defense. That's why I don't know if they can hold up in a series with the Warriors.
Right, and it's kind of funny because I think after that that reporter asked Russ and KD about Curry being an underrated defender, and Russ kind of snickered and said, oh, he doesn't guard best point guards. I think after that incident, like, Curry held Westbrook to like 40% shooting or something like that, completely outplayed him on the other end too. But yeah, Curry is a much better defender than people realize. And it's going to be interesting because it was funny that Cavs fans still cling to this notion that, you know, well, if we'd have had Love and Kyrie last year, we might have won. We could have won just based on the one block that Kyrie had on Curry in game one. You remember that?
Yeah. The game-saving block.
Yeah, the game-saving block against Kyrie or against Curry, and suddenly he can guard him. I'm a doubting Thomas on this one. I'll need to see it before I believe it that Kyrie can play good defense. You know, he's been better in the playoffs, but he's also, you know, he got lit up by Dennis Schroeder a couple times in the second round. He gave up, you know, 30-point games to Lowry in Toronto. Dennis Schroeder and Kyle Lowry are not Steph Curry. He's going to make Kyrie pay if he is not completely locked in. And we saw it happen to Russell Westbrook. It's hard to sustain that kind of defensive attention for a full 48 minutes for seven games. Like, it's just brutally hard. And I don't know. I feel like this might be a hot take, but I really do feel like the Cavs had a better chance last year without Love and Irving's defensive, you know, gaping holes, as opposed to if they would have had him. I think this year's team has a better chance than last year's would have with a healthy Love and Irving, but I really do feel like slowing the tempo down is going to be key again this year.
Yeah, if they try to run with the Warriors, they'll lose. I think that's been one of the biggest things. I've been saying this for a little while. This is one of the few hot takes I've gotten right.
Mm-hmm.
But no one can run with the Warriors, so don't try. Like, people kept saying, oh, Enes Kanter is unplayable. Mm-hmm. I didn't think he was. Like, if they can play Kanter and Steven Adams and get all those offensive rebounds, that's how a team with LeBron James and virtually no one else got to six games against the Warriors. Mm-hmm. Like, they grinded the shit out of them, took the pace to super, super slow, and just kept reloading LeBron. Like, why can't the Thunder do that with Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook? Well, it turns out they can. Except the Warriors are even better now, so good luck.
Right. It's tough for the Cavs because they've been playing so well. You know, they've got Channing Frye shooting like 58% from three in the playoffs, just drilling everything. And they're still, you know, they're still underdogs. They don't have the length that the Thunder had. They're not as good an offensive rebounding team as the Thunder were, and the Warriors still somehow overcame that major gap there. And even worse, the Warriors kind of found themselves over the last three games. You know, they're not kind of the first two rounds and especially the first part of the conference finals, the Warriors were kind of, they didn't look like themselves the whole time. They were still obviously better, and they did enough to win, obviously, but they did not look like the same juggernaut they did in the regular season. Over the last three games, they kind of looked like that team again, and I'd be a little worried about that if I were the Cavs.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit. Yeah, they look 73-9 again. I'm a little worried.
Yeah, that's not good news, especially because, you know, the home court advantage thing is going to be huge. Last year, the Cavs stole game two. Yeah, they stole game two, and that was just an amazing performance from LeBron.
That was the LeBron collapse game, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and that's what it's going to take in this series. It's going to take Love being able to, you know, stay hidden on Bogut for as long as they leave him in. It's going to take Thompson being able to make the Warriors pay on the offensive end. It's going to take Kyrie having the defensive series of his life. It feels like there's just too many things that have to go right for the Cavs for them to win this series.
Yeah, I mean, it's... if the Warriors stay healthy, and I never really bought into the whole Curry is hurt narrative, because it's like, look, Curry was healthier than any point guard on any team that they faced last year in their finals run. Like, they were all either out or super banged up. Like, Mike Conley played with a broken face, and he kept playing, which is like the most Memphis Grizzlies thing you can even think of.
Yeah, that's pretty much it right there.
Yeah, that sums it all up right there. Like, Z-Bo was jealous he couldn't have done that first. Z-Bo's probably more likely to break someone else's face. But anyway, like you just can't use injuries, though, to make any sort of justification. Like, everyone has to get over it. Like, no one's completely healthy. I think, completely off topic, the biggest winner of the finals is going to be Anderson Varejao. He gets a ring either way. He's guaranteed to be an NBA Finals champion.
which, you know, let the double agent narratives commence if the Warriors do somehow lose the series, because
I am forever stunned that he keeps getting minutes. And he was good in Game 7.
He was. That was the most crazy. He dribbled the ball behind his back. Year 2016, the year of our Lord, Anderson Varejão dribbled the ball behind his back and laid it in. I jumped off the couch when that happened, and I was laughing because I couldn't. I was like, Kerr, why are you bringing in Varejão over Festus Ezeli again? And then he goes out and do this. I'm like, okay, well, apparently Kerr knows something I don't.
I guess he saw Andy pull off a nice move in a pickup game the other week or something. I didn't think he had it in him.
That was the most bizarre thing. Those are the kind of things that you can never account for heading into a series like this. You know, maybe he'll have another moment like that against his old team. Maybe Channing Frye will come out and drain 8 3-pointers in a game. Like, you just never. We got the Mike Miller game a few years back in 2012 to close out the Thunder. So I don't know. It's going to be a fun series, but I think, and we're on the same page on this, I believe. But it sounds disrespectful, but I really do think the Warriors are going to close this out in 5 games.
Yeah, I know you had that in your article today. Yeah, I have Warriors in 5 as well. I've been talking to people like in my life, my so-called friends. Everyone's like, "Wow, he goes outside?" Only when it's less than 85. But I've been talking to people because people ask me, you know, "Oh, what do you think? What do you think? Finals?" I keep saying Warriors in 5, and everyone's like, "That's disrespectful." Like, do you see how good this team is and, like, how out of their minds the Thunder played and still lost 3 straight games to? Like, I think the Thunder choke narrative sucks because they were always pretty good. Like, they never had a game where they just completely shit the bed. They just couldn't handle how good the Warriors are. That's how good Golden State is.
Right, and I really do think for most of that 7-game series, you could argue that the Thunder were the better team and still lost more games somehow. Like, I really do think that the Thunder outplayed the Warriors, but then Curry and Klay started making shots, and it was all over. Like, there's nothing you can do to stop that. And the Cavs, as good as they've been, they have not faced a team like the Spurs or the Thunder or the Warriors in their playoff run. And that's going to be a bit, I mean, I think, I'm not going to say they're unprepared, but that's going to be a bit of an adjustment, especially with, you know, Irving's only played three quarters of one finals game in his career. Love has never been this far before. Channing Frye never been here before, even though he has some playoff experience. Like, those are factors. Those are going to play a role against a defending champ that won the last 3 games of last year's finals pretty convincingly with no finals experience on the roster. Now that they've been here before, now that they've got their mojo back, oh man, that's I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. And I do feel bad because, you know, most people are not opposed to seeing the Land finally win a championship.
Like, the Land.
We understand that the Land has been through a lot over the years, but oh man, it's hard to upstage history. And if they didn't lose that 3-1 series when they were down to the Thunder, I don't see them doing it to this Cavs team.
The Warriors are so good. For a while in the regular season, Matt Moore, who's very respected at HP Basketball, he really thought they were going to go 82-0.
And like, I was not far behind him, honestly.
They were that good. Like, they were just annihilating teams. Like, they're that good. I don't feel bad for the Land because now that, like, someone... No, if they did win this year, or either that or one city just did that hadn't in a while, Milwaukee's, like, third on the list now of longest championship droughts. It's, like, 70 years. I have no tears for the Land. None. None at all. We got 2 teams because the Packers don't count because that's Green Bay. So it's Brewers and it's Bucks. I don't think the Admirals count either because that's not a major league team. Okay. We only got 2 shots, and the Brewers are ass right now. The Bucks were kind of ass last year. It's not going to be next year for either of those teams. I don't cry for you, the Land. You had how many years with LeBron? Like, we'll take LeBron again. We didn't have that many Kareem years, but we got at least 1 title out of it.
Yeah, don't bring up Kareem to the Suns writer. That's just a sore topic, that damn coin flip. But
yeah, I forgot about that. Was Phoenix the other team?
Phoenix was the other team that lost.
Oh, wow.
Kareem, yep.
Wow. But, I always forget who the other team was.
Yeah, and it's Phoenix is also in that conversation if the Land were to win one, because did you see there was the Bleacher Report did one of their Game of Zones kind of mashups between NBA and Game of Thrones?
Oh, I don't know if I've seen the newest one.
They did a new one yesterday, I think.
Oh.
And they had Kyrie and LeBron sailing on a boat through kind of where the Stone Men were.
Oh, no.
Like Jorah Tyrion did.
Yeah.
And it was through Phoenix. there were all these stone statues like Mike D'Antoni and Charles Barkley and Nash. And then, like, they have the Stone Men drop in, and one's wearing, like, a Chase Budinger jersey. One's wearing a Brandon Knight jersey.
Like, oh, not B. Knight. Not B. Knight. Anyone but yeah. B. Knight. I love B. Knight.
I know. They threw B. Knight right under the bus. But
I got to watch that. I love that series. When they had Jordan as the three-eyed raven, but he's a hornet, I cracked up.
Yeah.
I died.
Yeah. No, they do a good job. But, I don't know. On the one hand, I'm happy that Cleveland actually has something to root for, because Browns aren't happening, Indians aren't happening. But
someone told me the Indians are good.
Oh, really?
I don't know. I barely watch the Brewers. I support my team, but man, baseball is slow.
Yeah, I can't do it.
No.
I can't. But
anyway.
We'll just pretend that the Indians are bad, even if
they're not. Yeah, that's fine. They're not going to win a title.
They're not going to win, so.
Yeah.
I just, it's good that the Cavs are good again. It's good that LeBron's home. But man, if they don't win this year, like how long can LeBron sustain his prime? Like, he's obviously still athletic as ever. He's still really damn good. But like, when are they going to win one if they don't this year? When is it going to happen for them? Are they really going to go through the prime of one of the greatest players of all time and not have a title to show for it? Like, man, that'd be brutal.
So you could say maybe LeBron's been carrying the Warriors behind, or not the Warriors. LeBron's been carrying the Cavs behind him in a cart, and their championship, instead of a window, it's a door, and it's closing. How long can he hold the door?
He can hold the door.
Hold the door.
Hold the door, LeBron. I don't know. It's brutal because he's one of the 5-10 greatest players of all time, and he may never win a championship for Cleveland if it's not this year. Because the Warriors aren't going anywhere. The Thunder, I mean, as long as Kevin Durant stays, which he probably will, he'll probably sign a one-year max with an opt-out for the next season. That'd be the smartest financial thing for him to do.
Yeah.
And then he could hit free agency with Russ at the same time. Like, the Thunder are still going to be really good next year. The Spurs, they're still, you know, they got beat by a better Thunder team, but they're still really good. Like, whoever comes out of the West is probably going to be favored against the Cavs.
I mean, if you look at it, like, this was year one of the new Spurs.
Right.
Like, they're going to get better, not worse. Like, this was year one of Kawhi and LaMarcus Aldridge working with each other. Like, Duncan's probably gone. We won't know it until he's just not there next year. Like, he's not going to announce it, but I don't think he's coming back. But, I mean, they're going to be back in free agency. I'm sure they'll have a little bit of money left. And as we saw with David West, that's all they need.
Mm-hmm.
The Thunder, I feel like Kevin Durant's certainly still on. I keep hearing Celtics rumors. I just don't see it. But on that note, I do think we're going to see another East powerhouse form this year.
Yeah.
I think someone's going to spring up. I mean, the Pacers feel like they're one good player away. Because Paul George is really, really good. Miles Turner's good. Monta Ellis is Monta Ellis. But like, if they could turn Monta Ellis into somebody less Monta Ellis, I think they could be very good.
Right.
I don't know. Like, the Hawks, I always want to like the Hawks. You know, Adam loves the Hawks. He's always on me about hating on the Hawks. Like, I don't know what one player the Hawks could add to make them better than Cleveland. Like, it's tough for them. But other teams in the East with superstars, like Toronto, if they could figure out, like, you never know what Miami's going to do.
Right.
Whatever team gets Hassan Whiteside gets a big boost. Like, I feel like, I mean, the Bucks will be better. They're not going to be a powerhouse next year, but they'll certainly be better if Giannis can sustain that play. But yeah. I think there's going to be another team challenging Cleveland, and it's going to be tough for them to keep holding off these young Bucks forever. Not literally, but hopefully literally Bucks. Maybe not literally Bucks.
Hopefully soon the young Bucks. But, yeah, I feel you there. I just don't – I feel like unless the Raptors are the one to add a really good piece or the Heat somehow retool with very limited financials, you know, cap space. Yeah. I just don't see – I still see them with LeBron, Kyrie, and Love. And honestly, last year they only needed – they needed Love for one round and Kyrie for, like, on and off half of the second round, like, and then one game. Like, they're just too – like, LeBron is still king of the East. I don't see – unless Kevin Durant migrates east.
Yeah, that – obviously that changes everything.
That would change everything, but I like you said, I don't see him going to the Celtics. I don't see it happen. Like, if he wants to win a championship, the only reason he'd go to the Celtics over the talent that he has in OKC is easier path through the East. Like, that would be the only sensical thing that I could make out, because Isaiah Thomas is not Russell Westbrook. You know, they don't even have a center that's even in the same league as Steven Adams. They don't have power forward in the same league as Serge Ibaka. Like, it's just that would be interesting.
Kevin Durant is like Daenerys, just like when is he gonna cross the narrow sea? Like, someday probably, maybe not ever.
Hopefully soon. The dragons are coming. We're just still waiting for them to start caring.
I hope everyone has at least limited knowledge of Game of Thrones. Like, you really should. It's great. Like, if you don't get these references, that's your fault. That's not our fault.
You don't get these references, you have 5.5 seasons of show watching to do, like, right now.
There's always one show that you need to, like, be caught up on. For, like, a day, it was The Walking Dead before, like, people realized Game of Thrones. Before that, sort of House of Cards, but really the last true juggernaut show was Breaking Bad.
Oh, yeah. Like, and I would reference that all the time.
I think you're wearing a Breaking Bad shirt. I'm not sure if you even realize that. God, yeah. The danger. I like that shirt. No one's gonna see it. I mean, I guess you could, like, tweet a pic. I don't know.
I'll probably tweet a pic when I tweet out the link later to this podcast.
Yeah, but it's like, that's one of those shows where, like, you should know what's happening in Breaking Bad and in Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones, it's harder though, because it's HBO. But, like, people find ways. Wink, wink. Hint, hint.
All right. I mean, HBO Go passwords are, you know, like, common trading currency now.
Yeah,
so it's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. You like, go watch it. It's amazing. It's so good. I'm addicted to it. I picked, like, I will watch Game of Thrones. I think I watched it over a couple NBA playoff games. Like, it's to that extent where, like, I need to see Game of Thrones.
Right. And we had, I think it was during the second round, we had the Warriors were blowing out the Blazers, so we had it on one TV, and then on the other one we were watching Game of Thrones, because,
yeah,
you know, I got to have the playoffs on. But
yeah, of course.
But it was, I think it was like the first week back. I was like, yep, this is going to happen.
See, I'll cheat and I'll say I'm watching, but I'll just watch on Twitter. Like, if I'm at work or something, like, I act like I'm, like, I'll even tweet along to try to blend in with everybody else. I'll just tweet based off other people's tweets. Like, damn, LeBron, after a bunch of people tweet things like that. Like, I'm a fucking chameleon out here. Like, you think I'm watching. I'm not always watching. Sometimes I have to be somewhere. Not everyone's as obsessed with basketball as I and you are. I'll just pretend. Like, I'm a faker.
Well, I mean, you gotta do what you gotta do. Littlefinger plays the middle of the field, too. So still alive, so you gotta do what you gotta do.
Yeah, you gotta do what you gotta do. Littlefinger style. I think we covered everything. Do you have any last things on the NBA Finals you want to share?
Any last things on the NBA Finals?
Watch the Cavs destroy the Warriors tonight and make all of this just null and void. Like, everything, we're like, yeah, dude, Warriors in five. Cavs will probably win one game, and they just come out and stomp them. I hope.
And that's what's funny, is Warriors in five would still be in play.
It would. It would.
You got to hold on to your predictions with all that you have.
Yeah, I picked, it was funny, I picked Thunder and seven over the Spurs, and after game one, I was just like, shit, like, I look so stupid, and then all of a sudden, they came back and won in six, and I was like, okay, not bad, that wasn't bad.
Yeah, and that's the funny thing about the playoffs is even when, like, the predictable result happens, sometimes it happens in the most roundabout ways. Like, after game one, I took the contrarian role of and I was like, oh, okay, yes, the Thunder lost by 30-whatever to the Spurs, but they're still not out of this series. And then they wound up winning. Next round, I write about how the Thunder are going to win the series when they're up 3-1, and they lose the series.
Yeah.
So it all comes back somehow. But I really, even if the war, like, predicting the amount of games for a series prediction, it's really hard because there's just no, like, logic or sense to it, really. Like, sometimes it just happens. Like, last year, the Warriors won it all on the road. Like, hardly anybody would have picked, okay, the Warriors are going to win the series on the road in Cleveland. Like, that's just boring. But, like, I don't know. I do feel like the Warriors are going to be a dominant team, even if it takes them six games to close it out. It's just asking too much of the Cavs, too much of LeBron, and too much of Kevin Love, honestly. We've seen his shot waver, his confidence waver so far in these playoffs when people start pointing the finger at him. Like, what's going to happen when he's in a fucking blender of pick and rolls with Kyrie Irving against Curry and Draymond Green? It's just not going
to
be good.
We need to find, like, I know there's a lot of people who do NBA art. Like, Arturo Torres does Shea Serrano's newsletter, which had me dying at the Kawhi erotica last week, which sounds so messed up. If you got to read it. It's so funny. And then the HP basketball guys do a great job. I need to see Kevin Love in the PNR blender, though. Just like, yeah. Curry and Draymond, like, swirling around him. He's like in the middle. I need to see that. I hope we can make that happen. I'm not a drawer. I can't do it. Hopefully somebody can.
Right. I'm not an artist either.
Hopefully they make the art. Either way, it'll be on Vine, which is just as good. It'll probably be even funnier to watch it over and over and over. It's so hard to be famous now with social media, but it is what it is. But I don't think the NBA players are crying too much in their huge mansions about Vine.
They'll be okay. But
they'll be okay.
Before we go, predictions tonight for game one.
Ooh, okay. Do you want score? I'm so bad at score.
Nah, I don't need a score. Maybe just like a point differential would work.
Okay, yeah, that's better. I'm going to say Warriors by like 12 or 13. I think Cleveland sort of tries to punch them in the mouth early, and then the Warriors don't go down, and then Cleveland's shoulders sag like Apollo Creed when he fought Rocky, and then they start to knock him out in game one and continue on it going forward.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have Warriors by 7 in this one. I think the Cavs are going to make this one of the closer games of the series. I think game one is one of their better chances to steal one on the road, just because they're going to be feeling each other out a little bit. We might see some lineup changes with Kerr that needs some getting used to, but the Warriors are just rolling right now, and I just can't pick against them until I see that they've lost on the scoreboard.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the Cavs' one win is game four. I think they lose three straight. They sort of come back in a pretty close, maybe not even that close. I think they just play better in game four, and then the Warriors shut it down in game five. That's how I generally see the series going.
Which would be, you know, not to our Cleveland listeners, obviously, but that would be fun just because, you know, to see the Warriors close it out at home in the middle of a historic season in front of that crowd, that would be,
yeah,
that'd be pretty special.
Yeah, they, as entitled as Warriors fans have sort of become, they deserve it. They're good fans.
They are. And that's what bothers me is the Warrior bandwagon sentiment. Like, no, that's not really a thing. They were kind of there through the dog years.
Yeah. Do you have anything you want to plug? I realized when I introduced you, I forgot to mention, like, your credentials.
Oh, like, we have, where I'm from?
Yeah, we have Hoops Habit editor, Gerald Bourget, here. Not just, like, I just figured people knew. I was like, well, it's Gerald. Everyone knows Gerald. But I should probably do that from now on.
Yeah, no, it's, I'm Gerald House Bourget.
Yeah, first of his name.
First of my name. Well, actually, second of my name, but,
Yeah, I am too.
And then, let's see, yeah, assistant editor at Hoops Habit. You can find my stuff on Twitter. Probably just wait for the link from Ty because you won't be able to spell my name right. And then, it's just hoopshabit.com. That's where all the good stuff is at right now.
Absolutely. Check out Hoops Habit for a bunch of more great NBA playoffs coverage. Check out Gerald's piece too. It really breaks down the whole series. I was going to do this podcast. I was like, well, what if I had amnesia and I didn't know anything about basketball today? I would still be good. It covers all of it. Check it out. Gerald, thanks for taking the time to come on the show. Oh, one sec. Intro and outro music to Joey Burbs. Thank you. Check out joeyburbs.com. I almost forgot to do that plug. I think I forgot one time, and Joey was low-key a little mad about it, so I don't want to forget again. Thanks, Joey. Thanks, Gerald, for coming on and talking hoops with me.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yep. Have a good one, my man.
Thanks, you too.